This podcast is sponsored by Runway, air traffic control for your mobile releases. Put your releases on autopilot. Runway will shepherd your release from kickoff to submission to release with no manual intervention. A single source of truth for your releases. Runway integrates with your favorite tools for a bird's eye view over release progress and blockers. Make your releases collaborative. Get a rich, contextualized release runbook that makes capturing responsibilities and tracking tasks crystal clear. Get more control on your releases on App Store and Play Store. Point your browser to runway.team. Thank you for sponsoring my podcast. I'm also revamping my newsletter. Check it out, appforce1.net to sign up. You can also find a sign-up link on my Twitter profile. Hi, and welcome to the 49th episode of the AppForce1 podcast. My name is Jeroen Leenaerts, and I've been developing software for over 19 years, developing iOS apps for over 9 years, and I'm running the Dutch Cokerheads for over 8 years. If you are an iOS app developer, you should listen to my podcast, because it will keep you updated on interesting articles, conferences, and events you might not have heard about. In this episode, I'm going to talk about writing effective software development notes for future you, how I prepare presentations and workshops, exec bad access crash error, understanding and solving it, analysis of CVE-2021-30860, solving CPU usage crashes with Xcode's Energy Organizer, multi-peer connectivity tutorial, and programmatic navigation in Swift UI. And of course, I will wrap up my episode with Donnie's Monday morning tweet. I've got a couple of different links in this episode. One is about note-taking and the other one is about creating presentations. You could say that this is due to me preparing myself for my new job, that for some reason that also exposes me to a bit of a different content, but also related to all the stuff I need to do to wrap up my current role, because I need to transfer a lot of knowledge. I have to talk about a lot of things and I have to check my notes very frequently and make sure that I present everything in a succinct fashion to all my colleagues that I will leave behind. I think that's interesting, and also the both of them are skills that are important for you as a software developer. That's why I included them, and I hope you liked them. If you look at my last week, it's been very busy. I've been busy with creating all kinds of documentation, as I already mentioned, and I'm just getting all these invites in my calendar of colleagues that just want to see me like one more time before I wrap up the month of October, even though it has only started for 4 days now. So let's just quickly dive in and see where we'll end up. So the first article is called Writing Effective Software Development Notes for Future You. So have you ever found yourself saying, I feel like I've solved this type of issue before, but I can't remember how I did it? Have you found it difficult to come back to a task once you've been interrupted? These issues can be solved by taking notes during development. Kyle started experimenting with note-taking quite a few years ago, and he found the benefits to be quite substantial. It may sound just like another thing for you to do, but with this article, Kyle hopes to show you how you can be very effective with little effort in creating your own notes. It will make you a better, more organized, and more efficient developer. Kyle talks about different types of notes that you can create, how you can create them, and which things you should actually write down, and also what kind of tools you could be using when creating notes. It's a very nice overview. I really like that he goes into how you can structure your notes as well. He has a preference for Markdown, which links up quite nicely with my own preference, actually. And I think it's just a good reminder what power note-taking can actually bring to you as a software developer. Another article I wanted to mention is Bas Broek. He wrote an article on how he prepares presentations and workshops, because recently he left Apple and he will now be giving another talk again. So he thought to write down how he prepares his presentations and workshops. So he also mentions that speaking or giving a workshop is not for everyone, and that's okay. So he would generally recommend that everybody at least try it once, and if you like it, continue it, and if it's not for you, then don't bother. What's really nice is that Bas gives a quick insight in how he creates his submissions to calls for papers and how he takes that submission to an actual slide deck at the end. He actually has a preference for a tool called DeckSet, which I use myself as well, which is great. But what's very interesting as well is that Bas really likes to write down things on paper, on a notepad, to just get the general timeline of his talk in order. So have a look at it and see the example image that he has provided of a talk that he created in his notebook. And maybe you can learn something from this as well. I really like it because it's just as the previous article, it's right up my alley. It's something I do myself as well, which I've always found hard to describe to people how I actually do these things. But fortunately, Bas has written an article that does this for me in one easy link. So have a look and see if it's something that you like to do as well. Now let's continue to some harder topics, which is crash resolving. Antoine van der Lee has written a nice article on ExecBAT access crash error resolving. So how you can actually understand and solve this issue, because it's a crash that happens quite frequently, unfortunately. But usually if it happens, it's something that you did. So it's something you have to figure out in your own code to see how and why it has happened. The article of Antoine is, as ever, very thorough, and it goes into details on how you can actually capture the crashes and log them to some system that you can use, but also how you can, during development, prevent yourself from creating these types of crashes in the first place. Because Xcode has some support for figuring out how you cannot corrupt your memory, and Antoine also details what are a common set of causes for these types of crashes. So have a look at this article and see if there's something you can learn there. The next article is an analysis of CVE-2021-30860. It was a crash present in iOS and macOS that allowed for zero-click vulnerabilities, and it has been exploited in the wild. Recently, Apple released iOS 14.8 and macOS Big Sur 11.6. Both fixed an integer overflow and a use-after-free vulnerability. The watchOS platform was also patched to fix the integer overflow issue as well. In this article that I link, there will be an analysis of the integer overflow in Core Graphics, CVE-2021-30860, and after examining the modified dynamic lib, it appears that there were other issues that were resolved as well, that were all related to image processing. This is really one of those articles that, well, you either like it to dig deep, or this is not something for you. The exploit detailed in this article has actively been used by Pegasus. At least that's one of the known entities that has used this this exploit. But most likely there have been other parties online that worked on this issue as well. What's interesting about this issue is that it's a zero-click exploit. So being sent the right image could already expose you to exploitation. And this article goes into some detail on how this has been executed in the wild. So to stick with the topic of complex stuff, the next article I wanted to focus your attention on is called Solving CPU Usage Crashes with Xcode's Energy Organizer. It's written by Bruna Rocha, and if you don't know what a CPU usage termination is, consider yourself lucky. Not only is this one of the nastiest crashes you can get in iOS, but it's also not even considered as a crash by the system. These terminations are not reported to crash providers like Firebase. So if your app has severe high CPU usage crashes, you don't even know about it until your users start reporting it. Really nasty stuff. In this article, Bruno explains what CPU exceptions are in iOS, how you can recognize them, and how you can search for them by using the Xcode Energy Organizer. It's a great approach, and by monitoring energy usage, you can actually see where CPU or GPU is being spent and have an idea of what you should actually optimize in your code to make sure that you not get kicked out of the memory. A very thorough article again by Bruno, and a great way to just look at your own executing code through a different lens. A smaller, often overlooked framework on iOS is called multi-peer connectivity. In the article written by Ralph Ebert, you will read about a tutorial that shows you how you can use multi-peer connectivity framework to communicate between iOS devices. The example shows how to implement the Connected Colors app, which synchronizes a color between multiple devices. The multi-peer connectivity framework provides a layer on top of the Bonjour protocol. Under the hood, the framework automatically chooses a suitable network technology. Wi-Fi network if both devices are on the same Wi-Fi, peer-to-peer Wi-Fi, or Bluetooth. The article basically is a big chunk of code that explains how you can initiate multi-peer connectivity server session and how you can actually connect to this session. It involves a lot of discovery and connecting, and then you're off to the races and can do great stuff with multi-peer connectivity. Multi-peer connectivity is a framework that allows you to connect in an ad hoc fashion with devices that you probably don't know, but that still are running the same code as your app and that you want to exchange information with. So you just get a number of devices together, they discover each other by any means available, and then you can do some networking. Final article is by Swift by Sandel. It's called Programmatic Navigation in SwiftUI. By default, the various navigation APIs that SwiftUI provides are very much centered around direct user input, that is, navigation that's handled by the system in response to events like button taps or tap switches. However, sometimes we might want to take more direct control over how an app's navigation is performed. And although SwiftUI still isn't nearly as flexible as UIKit or AppKit in this regard, it does offer quite a few ways for you to perform completely programmatic navigation within the views that you are building. In his article, John explains a number of ways that you can do typical UI behaviors from code, like switching tabs and controlling the navigation stack. Although SwiftUI's navigation system still isn't nearly as flexible as those offered by UIKit and AppKit, it's still powerful enough to accommodate quite a lot of the different use cases that you might have when running your user interface, especially when you combine it with SwiftUI's very comprehensive state management system. Also, of course, you always have the option to wrap your SwiftUI's view hierarchies within hosting view controllers, and use only UIKit and AppKit to implement your navigation code. Which solution that you will be the most appropriate will likely depend on how much custom and programmatic navigation you actually want to perform within each project. Those were the articles. Now let's move on to Donny's Monday morning tweet. Donny again this week on Monday morning asks what the plans are from people who are following him online. And I actually have an answer in this one as well. What I say is merging all kinds of stuff, updating to Tools 2.0, arranging Painter, prepping for a new job, knowledge transfer, and podcast recording. So lots of things to do today. And Peter Friese is updating the code snippets for his talk at SwiftLeads to make use of the latest features in SwiftUI and Firebase. Already he has thrown out an entire class and the code is a bit more readable thanks to list bindings. Clemens is in the midst of implementing SharePlay for Ladder Rooms, an Anagram-style game that he's released a couple of months ago. He has a video that shows SharePlay in action below, and his next step is to try and figure out how to make this work sensible with VoiceOver. On another note, François Boulet is announcing that he's launching Indie App Center 2021 edition. So don't forget to submit your app so you can consider to be featured in his advent calendar in December. And those were actually the big announcements on Donny's Monday morning tweet. Not a lot on there this week, but I do notice that the people that were on there but that didn't mention, they were mostly busy with learning new technologies and learning about SwiftUI and Core Data. So all in all, very much a lot of fun to do. Yeah, that's it for this week. I hope to talk to you again next week. Also, I hope you liked my mechanical keyboard special that I did last week on Thursday. If you haven't listened to it yet, please do, because it was a fun exercise with four people talking about mechanical keyboards for my podcast. We were all iOS developers, so that's the tie-in with my regular episodes and interviews on my podcast. Also, I have a lot of content ready for you. I have them, a couple of them available on my PodFan page. That's pod.fan/appforce1. So have a look there if you want to have early access to my interview recordings. So who knows, maybe it's something for you. If you have any feedback or just want to reach out to me, have a look at Twitter @appforce1. And as I already mentioned, talk to you again next week and have a great week.
Lead Developer, best practices and tips for lead software developers. PDF, MOBI and EPUB format. appforce1.net/lead developer. All one word.